with this vast audience here, since there will be thousands and thousands of questions undoubtedly to hold us over in ad infinitum. I'm Byron. I'm an alcoholic. I also have the pleasure of serving as the current Area 42 delegate. Area 42 is Nevada and Eastern California, and I would welcome you all to Wacky Paw 15 to Las Vegas. Wacky Paw is a Western Area Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you would please join me in the Serenity Prayer after a moment of silence for those who still suffer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Okay, the topic of our panel here is general service, and we have three distinguished panelists, one of whom is missing, but I can fill in. We are blessed, actually, to have Madeline, a past trustee, with us, so that's a blessing. But the first person I'd like to ask to read us a passage from the AA literature is Don M. If you would join us, please.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Don. I'm an alcoholic. This is a reading from the General Service AA Service Manual, PS1. It says, our 12th step, carrying the message, is the basic service that AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither and those who haven't been given the truth may die. Hence, an AA service is anything whatever that helps us to reach the fellow sufferer, ranging all the way from 12-step itself to a 10-cent phone call and a cup of coffee, and AA's General Service Office for national and international action. The sum total of all these services is our third legacy of service. Services include meeting places, hospital cooperation, and intergroup offices. They mean pamphlets, books, and good publicity in every description. They call for committees, delegates, trustees, and conferences, and not to be forgotten, they need voluntary money contributions from the fellowship. By Bill Wilson.
Thank you, Don. Our first speaker is Mike M. Mike's a good friend of mine from Las Vegas here, and I know he's I know from my own experience that he's been in general service for a long time here in Area 42. Mike?
My name's Mike, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Glad to be here. This is about what I was expecting. Couple supporters and one paid guest, so I'm glad to be here. I can sit here and tell jokes to fill up 20 minutes. I mean, my story's not that long, not that extensive, and I don't know how we're going to fill up 20 minutes, but I'll certainly try our best. I'm really interested in hearing our friend Milan share today. I'm anxious to hear about the general service. I got out in service outside of the group around 99 or 2000 is when I got involved in general service. And if you look at our triangle, it appears that the one that has the most authority in our general service are the groups. They have the highest, and the more responsibility that you get, the less authority and less voice you have if you go down the pyramid. So I've been able to work my way down the pyramid, so to speak, and about a year ago, I became eligible to stand for a position to serve my area as a delegate. And I was something that was really, really important to me to serve at that level. And I there was another gentleman that was standing next to me. And he happens to be sitting next to me at this moment. I tell you what, this guy was serving as the chair, the best chair that we've had in the 12 years I've been serving our area. And I knew that this was going to be an interesting vote. And he needed 66% of the vote in order to get the position, and he happened to get about 65.5% of the vote. So we went to the hat, and my name did not come out of the hat. And for the first time in my life, I felt all the air go out of the room. I mean, it was just gone. And I completely every morning get on my knees and ask and strive for God's will, and that was the clearest evidence of God's will I'd ever seen. I love General Service. I love my area. I love the guy's name that came out of the hat that day, and I'm so at peace with the outcome of that now, and knowing that it's God's will. I got a guest in town this weekend. In the past couple of days, I've been telling him about, hey, what am I going to talk about on this thing? What am I going to say? And he goes, you know, Mike, you need to tell the story about your experience within that election and let them know how that was and how that experience, your experience was, and let them know you're real. Now, this guy that I was talking with this morning has known me a long time, and he's always really encouraged me to let people know who I am at General Service, because I got this thing, I just come in and do my pitch and get out and I leave, and I a lot of times neglect letting people know who I am and my experience and my feelings. So that's one thing that I'm certainly striving for. When I got asked to, I just found out Monday. Today is Saturday, and Monday I found out that I was on this panel, and I'd ask, what is my topic? And they said, General Service. Okay, anything specific on General Service? And they said, just share your experience. Now, my experience of being involved in General Service is that I've been given a topic of this. Talk about this. Talk about concepts 1, 2, and 3. And you got 2 weeks to do it, and you got 15 minutes to share on it. Then literally every night I'd go home and spend an hour every night researching the topic, writing it out. Once I got it where I thought it was perfect, I'd rewrite it all over again. And then practice sharing about it, practice talking about it. Practice reading it in front of the mirror and going on and on and on and on for this perfect 15-minute presentation. So... this bid committee says, we'd like for you to talk on your experience in General Service. And I really felt like I was a fish out of water. You got to give me something to talk about. You got to give me something to research and study. And so here I'm talking about my experience. So if I had to choose a topic of my experience, if you walk into your home group and you see that literature rack, and those pamphlets that are hanging in that rack, there was a group that sat around that table after the meeting and spoke about ways to carry the message, and they thought of a way to put it in a pamphlet. There was one member in that group called the General Service Representative, and they gave him or her a blank sheet of paper and a pen and asked him to start taking notes. That General Service Representative started talking about notes that came out of that meeting. They carried that message to their district. Then the district committee member spoke about that topic. The district thought it was a great idea. The district then went and carried it over to the area. Spoke with the area chairperson and the delegate, and they all thought it was a good idea, and then the area talked about it. And they had written up a proposal, and they sent that to the General Service Office. And then on the General Service Office, it got discussed at the conference on the floor. And that process took anywhere between 2 to 10 years, but eventually a piece of AA literature came out of that. And it was just a group of folks like us sitting around the table thinking, how can we carry the message? Practicing the fifth tradition. And all that began with the General Service Representative sitting around the table talking about it. And that's really where the General Service for me begins. As there was a need for a GSR, there was no one to stand and make themselves available, and I said, gosh, I'll do it. I really want to learn about it. So I went into an environment and a district and an area, and they started throwing around all these acronyms, and I had no idea what they were talking about. I felt that they had all read or written a manual prior to me getting there, and it just, over a period, it took time. And I've really developed a passion for service, of giving back to the fellowship of either to my home group, to my district, to my area, my region, or AA as a whole. There's I've never found anything as a greater reward of giving back in that capacity. Sharing something with someone who has no idea what the first three concepts are and why they're important and valuable to them, why they're there and designed for the member in the group. So, I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me, and I love Byron. I love Byron a long time. So, thank you.
I remember that day well. Byron, alcoholic. Our next speaker is not here, so I'm going to fill in. When I first came into the fellowship, I had a sponsor, and he sat me down and asked me, like they all do, I guess, and said, "Tell me a little bit about yourself, Byron." So I'm telling him all the crap in my life, and, you know, bad person and blah, blah, blah. And he said, "Tell me some of the good things about yourself." So my chest stuck out to here, eyes lit up, you know. I said, "This is my chance." So people say that I'm pretty responsible and organized and disciplined and focused, and I can get things done. And he stopped me. He said, "Oh, so wait a minute." He said, "You are going to get along really, really well in this fellowship." He said, "We are filled in this fellowship with people who are ungrateful, self-centered, egotistical, control freaks like yourself." And he said, "I want you to get into service." And I said, "This is great. This is great. I'm going to get into service. I'm going to meet all the officers, the board. I'm going to meet the president, get on the inside track. I'm going to run for president pretty soon, a couple of years. I'll be there, you know, be right up there." And I got into service, and it was the best thing for me that I ever did. You talk about getting to be right-sized. Mike has mentioned it and is absolutely right. The upside-down triangle. You know, we get promoted down, it is absolutely spectacular. And for me, it was a key part of my sobriety, my recovery, and my growth in the program. And to tell you how far that came, that was about 14 years ago. And last year, I had the honor of representing Area 42 at the Prasa in Honolulu, and I went there, and they give you a badge, and I got Area 42 delegate, you know, and it's all printed out and looks important and all this. I'm walking around lost like everybody else, but I'm walking around, and this young woman, I don't know how old she was, but she could have been at this conference here as far as I was concerned, but she says, "Excuse me," and she looks at my badge, and she says, "Byron," she said, "you're a delegate, right?" I said, "Yes, I have the privilege of representing Area 40. She said, "I have a question." And I do not remember the exact question, but it sounded like, how do you reconcile page 132 of the big book with the third step in the long form of the fifth concept? And I'm looking at her like, you know, and this was a metamorphosis that happened to me. My first reaction was, "I'm a goddamn delegate. I'm gonna answer this question. Doesn't make a difference if I'm right or wrong. I gotta have the answer. I'm important, for Christ's sake." So I went right by that answer. And the next one I came to, all this happened in a nanosecond, of course. The next answer I came to in my mind was, New York. New York. How would New York deal with a question that got sent in like this, you know? "Well, it has been our experience, or the experience of other groups." You know, I was going to lay one of those on them and then say, "Well, now I'm going to give you the answer. It's not mine. It's somebody else's. You know, I can get out of this." Went right by that, and finally I got to the answer. And this is where the metamorphosis had really come for me. And I looked at her and I said, "Miss," I said, "my name has delegate on here because 6 months ago my goddamn name came out of a hat." I said, "Why do you think I've got an answer to that question? But let's go try to find someone that might be able to help us with that." And that was that's the kind of transition that's happened in my mind. And I can tell you, when I came into this program, no way would I have started there or gotten there. I had all the answers. I was in charge of the world. I had all the buttons. And if you did it my way, I went to the bar to celebrate. If you didn't do it my way, I went to the bar because I was pissed, you know, but I only had one place to go. So A couple other things about my service experience that I will share with you very, very quickly. One is, in addition to the humility thing, which was a big thing for me, service for me has kept me involved. Having service commitments makes me have to go to things. And I probably wouldn't have done that. I'm kind of a loner. I'm reserved. You know, I would have been able to isolate. And but it keeps you involved. And you know, they say go to meetings. Well, you know, I've gone to a lot of meetings that I probably wouldn't have gone to. I've gone to a lot of service activities that I probably would have never gone to. And I think that's been an important part of my recovery, an important part of my sobriety. And the last thing is that in service, you make a lot of contacts. And in my case, I've been blessed with making contacts not only in Area 42, Nevada and Eastern California, but at General Service Conference in New York. So I have names, addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses of delegates from every place around the country and foreign countries, a lot of them too. So wherever I am, and I am blessed with being able to travel a lot, I've got grandkids everywhere in the world, and I've got a name and an address and a phone number, and I can call someone if I get in trouble. I've been to a meeting in Australia. I've been to a meeting in Norway. I've been to a meeting in Costa Rica. I mean, you've got contacts. You've got names. We've all heard that story about Bill in the hotel. You know, how do I get a hold of someone? I need to talk to someone right now. I don't ever have to worry about that. If I ever have a need for that, I got a phone call, phone number, an email. I can get a hold of someone no matter where I am. And that's a wonderful sense of belonging. It's a wonderful sense of being able to reach out for help, knowing that you're not alone in this thing. Because I don't know when that moment is going to happen in my life where, you know, oh, my God, I really feel like a drink right now. But I've got someplace to reach out. So that's my experience with service. Thank you all for letting me fill in for Diamond D from Vancouver, B.C. Let me introduce Vivian G., who is with us from all the way from Malta.
Hi, everyone. My name is Vivian. I'm an alcoholic. As Byron said, I come from an island called Malta, which is in the middle of the Mediterranean. Malta is an island, very small, and has a population of around 400,000. I start with relating a little bit of the AA Malta story. As far as we know, the first English or the first AA meeting held in Malta was in 1966. There were two Irish fellows, Sean and Sam. Sean was an author and Sam was a veterinary doctor. They both had retired to Malta and both were alcoholics. Sam got sober in Malta. And Sean, who was traveling, visited Malta and contacted Sam through the GSO in London. So they started a meeting. And then for years, there was no progress because Sean had traveled and Sam was on his own. However, Sam had the bright idea of having a small advert in the national paper, once every month, a tiny one-inch square, and it was on the sports page. God bless his soul. And so that was the first time, and this was in the early 70s, that I had a look at this advert, because I always start my paper from the sports page. And there was it said, "Do you have a drink problem? We can help. Write to P.O. Box 33 and the name of the town." I didn't take any notice because I never had any problems with alcohol. And but it stuck into my mind. I don't know why. Then my story starts coming in. After a few years, in 1966, I was just out of, or rather dropout of university at the age of 20, and started working for my father. Working, I used to go to the office. And my father used to send me on errands, 9 o'clock in the morning, an errand that could take, 20 minutes, go to the bank, make a deposit, or pay a document or something, and come back to the office. I used to go back to the office at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, swinging and red-faced, and where have you been? Oh, there was a queue and had to wait. And well, the bank closed at 12:30. Oh, but I had to wait. And the story carried on and carried on. Then my father didn't trust me anything, you know. And I pretended that, you know, I'll be managing the office because, you know, it was going old. And but obviously he couldn't trust me. At 21, I got married. In a matter of 2 years, I do not know how. Well, actually, I do know how, but it so happened that I had 2 children. And I got married just to get rid of my father's engulfment of me, you know, taking control of me. Then, after these 2 years, 3 years, I mean, there was absolutely no dialogue between me and my wife because my drinking had progressed so much that things got worse and worse. The conversation of the day was at 6:45 every morning, and it consisted of 4 words: take the dustbin out. And that is my conversation with my wife, with my then wife, God rest her soul. And so, the nagging of the wife, my father's not trusting me, friends neglecting me, I was moving away from society, going down to the slums of my city of Valletta, and drinking with the worst lot that you can imagine, you know, playing cards with pistols on the table and the crazy stuff. And at the age of 31, you know, with all this nagging, I said, well, I must do something about this. I don't have a problem, but I want to see whether I can solve the situation of my family, the relationship with my father, with my friends. And so I wrote to this box 33, and sure enough, 4 days later, the mail isn't all that good in Malta. 4 days later, I received a reply. And this guy, Sean, told me, come and visit me. He had no telephone. He said, come and visit me at this address. And he gave me an address in a village. And so I went to see him. It was on a Sunday morning after a night-long drinking. And I had taken my small kid with me. And honestly, till this very day, I do not remember a word that Sam had told me. The only thing that I remembered was that we have one meeting a week on a Thursday at St. Patrick's Church in Sliema. It so happened that this St. Patrick's Church in Sliema was 50 meters away from my house. So I couldn't say I do not know where it was or get out of it. So I said, okay, I'll come, I'll try. When I went there, there were 6 people in this room, and that was the whole AA Malta. 5 foreigners. There was a Swede, Theo, Sam, Irish, Sean, Irish, John, English, and there was a Maltese guy. And he said, I told him, so you're the first Maltese? I said, no, there was a woman who was the first one. And she had gone in 67. Her name was Dorothy. She's still alive and still sober, although she doesn't attend meetings. But So when I went there, and now service comes into it, this guy was all enthusiastic, this Paul, and he told me, now we'll translate all the literature, we'll translate the big book into our language, into Maltese, which on its own is a very difficult language. And so I said, okay, so now what am I going to do? He said, you sit down here and listen. So, okay, so I sat down next to him and heard the stories of these guys. And when the denial still in the back of my mind, we read the step one, yes, I am powerless over alcohol only because I have problems, because I can't solve these problems, so I drink. And the second part of the first step, Mao, my life is not unmanageable. My wife is, but my life is. This is what my way of thinking was. I still had a job. I still had a wife at home. I still had a family. I still had a home. I still have a car. I still have money in the bank I did not have. I had a huge loan to pay. However, I started pointing at differences between me and them. However, I stayed and I continued going regularly to that one meeting a week for 11 months. And during those 11 months, I was introduced, as I said, to service. And when I say service, it was just putting the ashtrays. Well, at the end of the meeting, it was like London smog. So clearing up, putting the ashtrays, arranging the chairs, you know, making out the literature on the table, all these small little things. And that made me feel part of this group. However, unfortunately, you know, things at home, things, the relationship with my father, had remained the same. And now I realize, because I could not change my father, because till he died when I was 20 years sober, he never said, well done, or never. When he retired then, because he couldn't work anymore, I realized that he was trusting us, me and my brothers. And so at that time, I did not realize that he was, you know, he wasn't trusting me. And so I said, the relationship with my father remained the same. My wife still tells me, take the dustbin out at 7 o'clock in the morning. Or at the end of the month, where's my check? Or the boys, two sons, the boys were still afraid of me. Because I never changed. Because I did not, you know, hug them, kiss them, be a father to them. I didn't know how to. It had to be a complete drastic change, you know, in me. So I had an excuse and I drank again. However, I carried on keeping contact with this Paul, especially, who for me was my sponsor. Again, during those 11 months, they told me, read the big book. Yes, I did read the first, or rather the stories, not the first 164 pages, but I read the stories, which I liked. And then I read the big book. I did not read the big book as the big book says. The other things were, I did not find a sponsor, or rather, I looked around the six people that there were, for someone to tell me, yes, you're right, you're not an alcoholic, you know, you have a very difficult situation with your wife and with your father, so try to solve it other ways. But I did not. I did not. People here in this particular convention, it reminds me of when I came in, if there was this enthusiasm, perhaps I could have stayed. This lovely feeling of unity and love. Yeah? But it either because it was, I don't know, the character of foreigners living in Malta, you know, they rather keep to their own rather than mix with the natives, as some, they sometimes call us. And so, 9 years have passed, and I kept contact with Paul, did translations with him, although I was coming and going and drinking. And this was service for me. It was, there were also instances of doing 12-step calls. And we went, although I had been, you know, sober a week, then I drank again, a month, then I drank again, 3 months, and I drank again. I went to a couple of meetings here and there, just for curiosity's sake, whether the meeting is growing or not. I started, Paul and I started a Maltese-speaking meeting, because then we were about five Maltese. And so this was another type of service that I did. 9 years after I had, you know, these relapses and what have you, on the 12th December 87, was my last drink. And it was my last drink because I have finally reached my rock bottom. Something out of context, out of character. Sometimes something out of my character, that I had become violent. And my wife had got police in my house at 2 o'clock in the morning. So after that, I had to accept complete defeat. And I came back. I called up Paul, and they said, "Paul, I'm back. And if you had told me to stay on my head, you know, in a corner, I would have done that." And he told me, he said, "Look," he said, "in order to keep sober, you have to act. It's not only just coming to meetings, but you have to do something. Because you have to have action in order to survive." And it's true. Because from then on, I obeyed every single thing that was suggested. I stopped criticizing. I stopped analyzing. I stopped saying that I am, you know, too clever for this. And when we started visiting hospitals, again doing more literature translation. We translated the big book into Maltese, and now it's printed. Finally, started having, you know, organizing conventions. And these are all things that we have done in service. A problem that we have, and we have a lot of problems, but one of them was the relationship between us and the treatment. There are two treatment centers in Malta. One of them is government-run, so they are full of professors and doctors and psychologists and social workers and psychiatrists and what have you. And they have quite a few patients. But they do not send these patients to AA because they said they can do it on their own. So we as AA cannot interfere with the policies of these treatment centers. However, what we have done is try to contact through friends these patients, and some of them are coming to our meetings. Another treatment center is run by the church. And here, unfortunately, we are a little bit at loggerheads with the director of this, because he has changed the 12 steps, our 12 steps. And step five, and it says that we admit it to God, to ourselves, and to the director of the treatment center, the exact nature of our wrongs. And it was a very difficult decision not to act on that. And we finally said no. But he doesn't want to send also, again, members of his patients to our groups, because we found out that social workers or workers in that treatment center were asking people, patients, what the other patients said during the AA meeting. And so, you know, this was not done, and we have agreed to stop that group in the treatment center, unfortunately. However, having said that, some of the patients who are as an outpatient or a day patient come to our meetings in the village that the treatment center is. So, service has given me the strength to grow, to look forward, to practice humility, to practice tolerance. These are things that were not in my vocabulary when I used to drink at all. At all. And other things like Byron mentioned, being service, we have no service structure as such yet in Malta, because, as I said, we have two different groups, multi-speaking groups and English-speaking groups. The idea is to have two GSRs from each group, and or each set of groups, set of meetings, and then we'll have a committee formed, a GSC formed by these four plus other members who will be elected by the conference, so-called. And this will happen on the 11th of February, hopefully. So that's the situation in Malta. Also, I would like to finish that, you know, great experience and strength I got from the European Service meeting. I was a delegate in Frankfurt for, you know, two terms. And now I'm looking forward, as they have nominated me as delegate for the World Service meeting in October in New York. So I thank you all. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Vivian. It's always interesting to hear how the rest of the world works. It's the same, only different. We got time to kill if we want to kill it. Anybody have anything that they'd like to add from the audience there? We got more than enough time. So. Got another Area 42 service person in here. The archivist. Okay, then I think if you've been at this meeting and you've managed to develop a huge resentment, you're in luck. The 11 o'clock meeting after this is a panel on resentments. You can go and work on them. And I would ask Don, my agenda says, if you would give us a moment of silence and then close with a prayer of your choice. Yeah. Yes. Of course. Dale. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if you're anything like me. I do a lot of service in Europe and stuff. And when I go places, I just want to fill a stadium. And
Yeah. Let me, I'll ask these other gentlemen to comment on that, but just maybe a couple of, share some thoughts that come to my mind, not that they're right or wrong, but come to my mind. One of the things that I have grown into is to listen first and talk later. And that's really helped me. As I told you, I've been to meetings in Norway and Australia and Costa Rica. The meeting I've been to in Norway, obviously they speak Norwegian in Norway, in case that might not come as a surprise to you. But everybody over there speaks English. And when I get there, when I got there for the couple meetings I've been there, they immediately realize that I'm American, I do not speak Norwegian, and they switch the meeting to English. Now, that's quite a high level of tolerance. I don't feel that it's my right, if you will, to tell them how to do things, so I sit and listen. My own personal experience in Australia, I went to a meeting down there, and it was wonderful. I called the hotline. They came and called me back, and they said, we'll send a guy over to pick you up at the hotel at so-and-so time. So I went down, and he picked me up, took me to the meeting. It's in the basement of a church. There's a shocker. And I did not understand some of the drinks they were talking about. I didn't know the names of the bars, but I sure understood all about the family problems and the kid problems and the job problems. You know, and all those things made no difference to me. So there's a similarity, and what I've done in my own experience from around the world is rather than preach, listen, because I can learn a lot from all that experience, and it's been wonderful. The meetings I've attended in Costa Rica, the first meeting I went to was a mistake. It was a Spanish meeting. I don't speak Spanish either. They were very polite, but they didn't speak a lot of English, so I just nodded and smiled a lot. But the next meeting was an English meeting, and I was able to get to that, so a lot of fun. Ask other people, comment their own experience or whatever. I would just add, I got to tell you, I share the enthusiasm that you're expressing, which is, you know, I want to shout about my own experiences and the wonderful parts of my life and all the good things that have happened, and tell about all the bad things that don't happen to me. And, I mean, I would love, I mean, I want to do that. But I've been able to refrain from that and do a little more listening. And part of that, Madeline can comment on that, but part of that is from my own experience in New York. I mean, never have I experienced so many people talking about so much for so long. And I tell you, it is a challenge down there, over there, to listen, that's helped me too. Anyway, enough of my day. Anybody have any comments?
Can you
say
on that one?
Sure.
Don
O'Connor. Don?
I think this kind of ties into my whole thing in Montana. There is on January 23rd, 1996, my dad got diagnosed with terminal cancer. I went up there and listened to that, and my sponsor knew this guy in Kalispell. It's Kalispell, the big town. Well, my parents were the population 100. Lake, I mean, it's really small. And they dug out an old meeting schedule, this guy that I met in Kalispell. It's recorded.
Oh. And they dug out an old meeting schedule that had this treatment center for teens up there in the middle of nowhere, Montana. It's the Wilderness Treatment Center. And they gave me this meeting schedule. All of a sudden, I ran into one of the newer meeting schedules, and that meeting wasn't on there. You know, and I started asking, how do you get that meeting on there? Because I want other people to come to this thing instead of me. So basically that tricked me into being the liaison for treatment and hospitals area rep, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I want these kids to get it. You know, I went there every week. There's every 60 days, there's 45 new kids. And I wanted these kids to get it. I wanted to go down there, and I'm the cheerleader for this thing, you know, and I really, really wanted to get it. And I started going to these in-town meetings and telling these guys, hey, I got 45 kids that are newcomers every 60 days. Come on out here, and you guys can share your experience, strength, and hope. Tonight when that committee stands up, there's a couple of them on there from Montana. I'm here with a half a dozen of them, you know, as I walk through this thing. I see them. I couldn't see the results up there in Montana. I couldn't see the results from all the stuff that I was doing. But now, One of those kids went to Estes Park. I gave him the I get to talk to that speaker that spoke last night because he was talking about being Mr. Wacky Paw, the first Wacky Paw guy, and that was one of the flyers that I gave out. I'm still giving out flyers today for our Super Bowl party in Thompson Falls, Montana, the Not a Glum Lot on page 132 that we talked about, and I know how that interacts with all these other concepts. You know, but he went to that Icky Paw thing, and he came back there, and he fired up all these other kids that were there in Montana by talking about what happened at an Icky Paw with a bunch of young kids, and he got it fired up in that little small town. And these, I got three speakers that are going to be with me back in Montana. They leave a little later than I do, but they're going to be my speakers for the next few weeks leading up to this Super Bowl party where we've rented the whole bowling alley, the all six lanes of it, you know, and the pool part, you know, and it's like, but it's just sharing the enthusiasm of recovery, and I'm glad I got to read that today, was carrying this message as our thing. And my message for these guys is your life isn't over when you get sober. I got sober at 28 years old. These guys were that Sunday night meeting in the basement and sit there with the same five guys talking about their tractor stuck in the thing and I almost drank because my tractor got stuck in the mud and my horse got out because the fence broke, or, you know, they seen I was getting ready to leave. They took me to a young people's thing in Lewiston, Clarkston, Idaho. It was college kids. The next thing you know, I'm on all this outreach stuff, all this sponsorship stuff, carrying these flyers around to get us all connected together to go have fun. And it's exact the same six people started watching all these other people coming from other towns. We'd have one of these potlucks and all that. Where are these guys from? You know? And I love the where he said he has contact from all over the United States and the world. But that's what I do with these things. I carry this book around with me. Because when these kids leave Montana, I want them to have a phone number of somebody that's connected that can say, hey, we need you to be the T-shirt guy. Or we need you to be the, you need to watch the pool and make sure that nobody steals the towel. Just give them something to do to get connected, you know, and they're a part of this thing. They're not just a participant. And, you know, I know that's why I'm still here today. My very first service commitment was splitting firewood at this garage meeting. And I ran into a lady at the Boise Wacky Paw a whole bunch of years later. And she said, you know, I was there and they started the meeting 10 minutes late because you were splitting more firewood in 10 minutes than they could split all week. These old guys are out there, oh, like that. And I'm just splitting wood. But that service commitment made me want to go back and burn that firewood the next week. That's why I'm still here. You know, I love this thing. And the enthusiasm is contagious. The more people we get affected with it and linked together with it, it starts getting contagious. And I've watched this thing grow for a long time now. And I know why I'm here. It's from that flyer. Ever since that kid came back and he showed us all what excitement was, because I was 4 years sober at that time. I just celebrated 20 years on the 14th of January. But this particular conference has given me, since it's been going, quite a few years of sobriety, and I really enjoy it. So I hope that helped you out. Thanks.
Other questions, comments? Yes, ma'am.
Bring it to you, and they will bring you speakers. We found that if you take our young people to other people's consciousness, that we have a lot more success with that than trying to bring it to us. One of our major goals this year is to get as many people to St. Louis to take the call. But we struggle with that a lot. We're trying to
I'll tell you, this may be talking out of school, but I've been in service in Area 42 for a number of years, and I have been to meetings, our Southern Area Conference meeting and our Northern Area Conference meetings, some years when there has been no one representing young people. It is dead. And here we are today with Wacky Paw in Las Vegas. So this seems to be cyclical or something. But it's a game of individuals. You got a couple of people who have that fire in their belly, and they, you know, make people get involved as volunteers. How's that? So that's your experience is not new to Las Vegas. I can tell you that. Because I thought when there was a proposal a number of years ago to bring Wacky Paw to Las Vegas, I was very skeptical that they could get enough people interested and enthusiastic to even begin to pull it off. I mean, it really made me nervous. And here we are. I mean, we got 2,000 people. Fantastic. So I empathize with what you're saying. Anything else? Droned on and on and on. Don, you want to help us close here?
Yep.
Please.
Sure.
We'll join me and do something. I don't know. I was afraid they would fall on a flat face and embarrass the area.